what would happen if one woman told the truth about her life? The world would split open.
In the 1960s, radical change came to American poetry.
First, are you our sort of person?
A thinking woman sleeps with monsters.
Won't you celebrate with me what I have shaped into a kind of life?
Women's voices started to ring out in an art form historically dominated by men.
Women have been liberated to write about anything they want to.
I am the history of rape. I am the history of the rejection of who I am.
I'm Meryl Streep. Join me for A Change of World, Poetry and the Women's Movement.
Out of the ash, I rise with my red hair, and I eat men like air.
I'm Curtis Fox, the producer of that documentary. It's based on a series of podcasts that the Poetry Foundation has been putting out over the past year or so. If you want to hear the Meryl Streep narrated special, check with your local public radio station to see if it's on the schedule. If it's not, please ask them to carry it. It's free to stations, and it's on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. I'll remind you about this at the end of the podcast. Now, here's episode 5 of the podcast series, A Change of World, which originally dropped in January of this year. This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry gives birth. This is part 5 in our series, A Change of World, about the intersections between contemporary poetry and second-wave feminism. In this episode, we're looking into how women poets made birth and family a central preoccupation of contemporary poetry, just as it is in life.
And today, when I go to kiss her, and she says, "Not now, I'm reading," still, she deserves a syllable or two, if only so I can express how furious she makes me.
This is a poem called Crowning, about the birth of my son.
Many poets today, female and male, write about having children or not having children, about being parents, about pregnancy and birth.
Watching your mother's pursed, throbbing, purpled power, her pushing you for one whole hour.
I don't expect you to remember or understand the many ways I've kept you alive, or the life my love for you has made me live.
50-plus years ago, poets almost never put this kind of stuff in their poems.
Women's roles were diminished, and people didn't want to talk about the female body. And it was considered taboo, I think.
Poetry had to have a certain level of transcendence. And what's least transcendent than changing a diaper, right? I mean, you can't transcend the dailiness of motherhood.
Up to the 1960s, if not beyond, the idea of being a poet and a mother at the same time was often frowned upon. Even Muriel Rukeyser, the great progressive feminist model for women poets of the 60s and 70s, had called the years when she was mothering the intercepted years. Of course, one reason for viewing family life as an impediment to poetry was that family life was not an approved subject for poetry.
I got a lot of rejection slips from editors who were all male, many of which were contemptuous, and a couple of which were scary.
Sharon Olds remembers submitting to literary journals in the early 1970s.
These were love poems, many of them, and they had children in them. And the editor would say, "If you wish to write about your children, may we suggest the Ladies' Home Journal? We are a literary magazine."
Getting published was one thing. Another was figuring out how to write about motherhood, birth, and family life. There were a few poems from the past that showed a poet how she might go about it.
There were and there are, but they're not saved and they're not preserved. And it's just another way that women's voices haven't been canonized, hadn't been preserved, have been erased.
Not everything has been erased. Lainey Brown is a poet and professor who has written about her own experiences as a mother. We asked her to comment on one poem that has escaped oblivion. It was written over 100 years ago in 1914 by the British modernist Mina Loy. It's called Parturition.
I am the center of a circle of pain, exceeding its boundaries in every direction. The business of the bland son has no
effect. It's written from inside the experience of birth, birthing.
The speaker in the poem seems to be moving in and out of labor pains.
And it includes concrete details, corporeal details. It doesn't shy away from the body.
I am climbing a distorted mountain of agony. Incidentally, with the exhaustion of control, I reach the summit and gradually subside into anticipation of repose, which never comes. For another mountain is growing up, which, goaded by the unavoidable, I must traverse, traversing myself.
It's pretty astonishing. It doesn't glamorize, it doesn't sentimentalize, and this acute awareness of human beings as animals.
And the foam on the stretched muscles of a mouth is no part of myself. There is a climax in sensibility, when pain surpassing itself becomes exotic, and the ego succeeds in unifying the positive and negative poles of sensation, uniting the opposing and resisting forces in lascivious revelation.
A poem written inside the experience of childbirth, I think it's completely unprecedented.
Unprecedented and relatively unknown to women writing during feminism's second wave in the 1960s and 70s.
You know, she was celebrated in her life by luminaries, but Mina Loy's work was out of print for a long time. This book was reprinted not until 1982. For a lot of women writing, it wasn't visible.
It wasn't until 1966, with the publication of Sylvia Plath's book Ariel, that a mother's poem about having a baby got serious literary attention.
Morning Song.
So the first poem in Sylvia Plath's book, Ariel, is Morning Song. And the first line of the poem is, love set you going like a fat gold watch. So the poem begins with love.
Love set you going like a fat gold watch. The midwife slapped your foot soles, and your bald cry took its place among the elements. Our voices echoed.
Perhaps even more unusual than a poet talking about birth in an unsentimental way was a poet admitting her ambivalence about being a mother in the first place.
I'm no more your mother than the cloud that distills a mirror to reflect its own slow effacement at the wind's hand.
The central question of the poem is, what is a mother? What is the cost of motherhood?
All night, your moth breath flickers among the flat pink roses. I wake to listen. A far sea moves in my ear. One cry and I stumble from bed, cow heavy and floral in my Victorian nightgown.
She's at the beck and call of this baby, but at the same time, this baby will erase her.
That's Rosa Alcala, a professor and poet who, like Lainey Brown, has written about mothering and motherhood.
That's why she was Sylvia Plath. That's why she set herself apart from other women of her generation or of other writers, because she wrote about these things.
Your mouth opens clean as a cat's. The window square whitens and swallows its dull stars. And now you try your handful of notes. The clear vowels rise like balloons.
I think of my own case of reading Sylvia Plath. You know, I started reading her when I was very young, and I don't think I was thinking at that time about motherhood and about being a mother, but I was very aware of the difficulties for a woman in the 1950s, as Sylvia Plath was, of trying to straddle these two things of being sort of the perfect mother and also being a writer herself. And she often seemed a cautionary tale to me that trying to do these things was incredibly difficult. And I was often given the message that maybe one would have to choose because it would be difficult to do all of these things.
It's not so helpful. I mean, it's a terrible model to have, you know, the devastating suicide. Like, this is not a sustainable, helpful, yeah, we needed more models. And Sylvia Plath needed more options.
There was at least one other famous poet out there serving as a model.
I mean, I think back to the poems of Gwendolyn Brooks, who I do think managed to write about womanhood and girlhood and childhood in the broadest senses. So I do think there were some folks doing that before Plath, it should be said.
Kevin Young is a father, poet, and editor.
And, you know, her famous poem, The Mother, is very much about not having a child.
The Mother.
I think that was really breaking powerful ground.
Abortions will not let you forget. You remember the children you got that you did not get. The damp, small pulps with a little or with no hair. The singers and workers that never handled the air. You will never neglect or beat them, or silence or buy with a sweet. You will never wind up the sucking thumb, or scuttle off ghosts that come. You will never leave them, controlling your luscious sigh. Return for a snack of them, with gobbling mother eye.
We don't think of her as a confessional poet, and therefore we kind of don't think of her as writing about personal matters. And I'm not saying these are autobiographical matters, but they are deeply personal and about everyday life.
Oh, what shall I say? How is the truth to be said? You were born, you had body, you died. It is just that you never giggled or planned or cried. Believe me, I loved you all. Believe me, I knew you, though faintly, and I loved you all.
This is a poem that's a very personal one for me. It was a time before I could write it, but I found after reading a poem called The Mother by Gwendolyn Brooks, her poem enabled me to be able to write clearly this poem, which is about an abortion.
Lucille Clifton published her first book in 1969, when both second-wave feminism and the Black Arts Movement were in full swing. Her poems are what we might now call intersectional, combining concerns of race and class from a woman's personal perspective. Kevin Young edited her collected poems, and we asked him to read and comment on Clifton's The Lost Baby poem.
The time I dropped your almost body down, down to meet the waters under the city, and run one with the sewage to the sea. What did I know about waters rushing back? What did I know about drowning or being drowned? I think that's just an incredible opening because she invokes the sea, the city, the waters, these very, again, mythic, primal things. But she's also, I think, invoking this modern moment.
You would have been born into winter, in the year of the disconnected gas and no car.
It's the time when the gas was turned off and thinking about what decisions are made because of financial realities.
We would have made the thin walk over Genesee Hill into the Canada wind to watch you slip like ice into strangers' hands. I mean, I think she's imagining this walk over the hill, and I take it to be an actual hill, but also the hill, the mountaintop, you know, to deliver this baby up for adoption.
If I am ever less than a mountain for your definite brothers and sisters, let the rivers pour over my head. Let the sea take me for a spiller of seas. Let black men call me stranger, always for your never named sake.
I think Miss Lucille is one of the greats. She was defying conventions of black writing, of white writing, of poetry in general. You know, she was able to break through and combine the personal with the public in a way that I think is really fresh and new and radical.
Won't you celebrate with me what I have shaped into a kind of life? I had no model. Born in Babylon, both non-white and woman, what did I see to be except myself? I made it up. Here on this bridge between starshine and clay, my one hand holding tight my other hand. Come, celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and has failed.
For me, the poem is always this thing that is making the ordinary extraordinary and making the extraordinary ordinary. And that kind of mix of Miracle and everydayness, I think, is where poetry works the best.
Miracle and everydayness, making the extraordinary out of the ordinary. Lucille Clifton managed to do this in her poems while raising 6 children. There were other poets in the late 60s and early 70s who found ways to write significant poems while being mothers, whose poems changed the way poetry itself could be written so that it included birth and children and family and much else besides. We're going to talk about 2 poets in particular who still serve as models for poets today.
I hit my head on the wall for years after having my daughter, just thinking, you know, at some point things will sort of calm down and I'll be able to write like I used to. And I think, like, they ain't going to happen. Like, I just... life has changed, you know, and I have to learn to write in a different way.
When Rosa Alcala was a young mother, she looked for examples of older poets who had combined poetry and motherhood in interesting ways.
For me, the writers who really gave me permission were Bernadette Mayer and Alice Notley. They seemed to present a kind of poetry that felt as if children would just kind of part of the milieu, a part of what they were doing, of what was moving around them, right? There was literature and poetry at the same time. And that felt very accessible to me.
Alice Notley and Bernadette Mayer were both part of the East Village poetry scene around the St. Mark's Poetry Project in New York in the early 1970s. Lainey Brown was also drawn to their work.
They made these active decisions, right, about what they wanted to let in their work or what they didn't want to let in their work. And it was an experimental process.
Experimental in Alice Notley's case in that she didn't just talk about children in her poems. She included their voices. This was something new.
Mommy, what's this fork doing? What? It's being Donald Duck. What could I eat this? Eat what? This cookie. What do you mean? What could I eat it?
Does he buy? She doesn't prescribe. She doesn't have a prefixed idea of what motherhood is or what her family should look like. She's looking at her children as fascinating human beings, and she's conversing with them, and that conversation and her exploration and learning who they are and they learning who she is, that's in the poems.
Do you remember when you were like Edmund? Yeah. What did you do? Crawled with him. Do you remember last year? Yeah. Mommy, what did you do when you be Anselm?
Alice Notley and Bernadette Mayer were both associated with the New York School of Poetry.
You know, this idea of writing things as they're happening, collapsing the low and the high together.
How early it is. It is 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, the pigeons were up earlier. Did you eat all your eggs?
With one exception, Barbara Guest, the first generation of the New York School was all male, John Eshbery, Frank O'Hara, and Kenneth Koch. The second generation was where poets like Alice Notley and Bernadette Mayer took on some of the poetic strategies of their colleagues from a female perspective.
There's a mixing with other modes, like other states of consciousness, dream state, visionary state, the space of imagination. These are all active ingredients in the poetics, along with the quotidian, the concrete, and the daily.
Both Notley and Mayer became mothers early in their careers, so the quotidian and the daily often included children.
When one is pregnant, especially 8 months pregnant or whatever, one is constantly thinking about the act of giving birth.
Right before having her second child, Bernadette Mayer wrote a poem called Baby Come Today, October 4th.
One thing I love about this is that the title and the poem is a command. She's thinking, well, what if I could just make it happen now? And then she writes the birth into being.
The poem doesn't start with the birth. It starts with a poet at the window of a country house. One of the window panes is a piece of cardboard from a box used to ship a furnace. And the poet reads what's written on it.
Ecstatic experiences with nature. This is an automatic furnace. Do not drop or roll. Do not handle with squeeze lift truck. Handle with care. This is a piece of quality assured home heating and cooling equipment. The Ohio Valley container.
Gradually, the poet shifts her attention to what's going on inside her body.
There is no pain. The first frost comes, the second baby. We'll have to turn up the heat, eat nothing, and breathe through a rose, emulating the butterfly's patterns and the repetitive indifference of leaves turning pink. Color of the rose, so flushed, orange color. Color of trees, ecstatic mists train us. No feeling, no feeling, only moving beginning. The pain crashed, baby falls between loose pelvis onto the sheet.
It's not sentimental. There's economic concerns. There's beauty. There's color. And it seems like it's also the creative process to bring a human into being, to be generative in itself as an ecstatic experience.
After pretension to be singly devoted to one's task is swayed to love, then the simple movement from inside to outside become astonishment, red, yellow, orange, and eyes bright. Sophia Crystal foretells, as I foresee, absence of memory who sings eternally, only to sing more and more.
Bernadette Mayer, Alice Notley, Lucille Clifton, they and other women poets of their generation wrote birth, children, and family into their poems and into American poetry. In the process, they brought a new kind of poetry, a new way of relating to experience and to being.
There's this disobedience, right? This resistance to the idea that women are described in relation to their roles to others. I am a daughter, I am a sister, I am a wife, I am a mother. And what are the societal expectations of that? And that's how women are seen in the culture. There's a rejection of that in all these women's work that we're talking about.
I think we benefited from all of that work that was doing and all from all those different writers writing in all these different ways about motherhood. We had so much more movement. We had so much more flexibility in the way we approached this topic than ever before.
This has been the fifth episode in our series, A Change of World. Thanks to Hannah Brooks Modell for her editorial advice on this episode, and to Penn Sound for the archival audio of Bernadette Mayer and Alice Notley. Cindy Katz read Sylvia Plath's Morning Song, and Hannah Cabell read Mina Loy's Parturition. Do let us know what you think of this podcast and of this series in particular. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. You can link to the podcast on social media from SoundCloud, or you can subscribe to it in Apple Podcasts. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks very much for listening.
In the 1960s, radical change came to American poetry.
What would happen if one woman told the truth about her life? The world would split open.
I'm Meryl Streep. Join me for A Change of World, Poetry and the Women's Movement. We'll hear how the women's movement changed poetry and how women poets worked together to change the culture.
Check with your local public radio station to see if they're carrying this hour-long special with Meryl Streep, which, like this podcast, is produced by the Poetry Foundation. If it's not on your radio station's schedule and you want to hear it, please ask them to carry it. It's free to public radio stations, and they can find it on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.